Leading off with the big story of the day, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and Tina.
Very predictable offense thus far here for the Denver Nuggets.
Here comes Paul. Twitches on the cut. Oh, he came in hot and high. Suns by 20.
It's the Nuggets' largest loss of the season in a night where they were celebrating their MVP, Nikola Jokic.
I saw one team that wanted to be here and play with a purpose and urgency. And one team that did not want to be here and play with no urgency. And that's why we got our ass. They've had their way with us on both ends of the court. I felt we quit tonight, which is something you never want to see. So I guess for game three, I'm just going to try to find guys that will at least go out there and leave it all on the line. I may have a hard time coming up with five guys that fill that, but these two games, these second halves, have really been disappointing, and that's an understatement.
Bears be walking in the crib and everything.
Oh, man. Well, got Orlando Franklin in for Tyler today, but asking our guy Zach By to hang around a little bit. ZB, my man.
First of all,
Orlando, nice to have you here. Thanks for coming back in.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me. This is the third time now that I've been at the studio. By the way.
All right. Good.
Third time.
Well, good.
Just sob story right out of the gate.
I want you guys to feel bad for me. I'm a sensitive guy. I'm the gentle giant, guys, so I got to let you guys know.
Well, cool. We're glad you're here, gentle giant. I did ask Zach just for a little bit because – Zach, I was in Orlando. I was taking some heat because I was on Phoenix Radio yesterday. And I said, hey, Jokic is going to dominate Ayton. And if he doesn't get any help, we could be in trouble. And we got to figure out a way to contain Chris Paul. And it was crazy the feedback I got from Phoenix. Like, they were like, Jokic do over Ayton. And I'm like, he was about to clean Ayton's clock. Ayton had two fouls. Jokic was having his way. If the game was close, in my opinion, in any sort of direction, Jokic was going to put up 35 to 40. And Ayton, I don't know what he was going to do. Probably not a whole lot of anything. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter, Orlando and Zach. It didn't matter because you couldn't shoot the basketball. Yeah. And you had historically, and I saw that stat too, Zach, the worst second worst 3-point shooting first half in 25 years. And it didn't matter about Jokic and Ayton. It was irrelevant. And by the time the third quarter started, it was toast.
Yeah. You're not going to look at that matchup of Jokic and Ayton when you're not getting nothing from the surrounding cast.
It doesn't matter.
You look at Nikola Jokic, just statistically, you're kind of like, with the points last night, because we became used to seeing Nikola Jokic just flat out go out there and dominate. And he still had a good game. But then when you look at guys like Aaron Gordon, 6 points. You look at Jamichael Green, 4 points. You look at what they were combining for 6 rebounds, 44 minutes between the both of them, not good enough. And it was a lot of that. Monte Morris' performance yesterday, not good enough. Michael Porter Jr., I know you got the back issues, but nowhere near good enough. So you really didn't pay attention to the matchup of Jokic and Ayton yesterday because of it.
Zach, I asked you to walk me off the ledge. You had picked the Nuggets to win.
Yep.
Grudgingly, I did pick the Suns to win because I just didn't see how you were going to control these other elements, specifically Chris Paul. And I hate to be right on this one, but I certainly didn't anticipate it to be like that. So help me out here, pal. Help me out here. What were we watching last night?
You're watching a team that has seriously underperformed, man by man, Nikola Jokic included. And you're seeing a team in Phoenix that is truly hitting its stride. Guys, it wasn't supposed to be like this. The experts in the desert in Las Vegas, they don't care about the Drive or Stokely and Zach or this segment. It was a 5-point
Orlando and Sandy.
Okay. Orlando, there you go.
They may care about them.
but this was a 5-point spread last night. This is a 5-point spread in game one. These games were supposed to be close. the second half scores in game one and game two, if you combine them, it's 136 to 103. I mean, this isn't close. It's not close at all. And we're seeing, you know, I picked Portland in the first round because I thought we were going to see in the first round what we're seeing in the second round, just a total lack of firepower. If Nikola Jokic isn't getting it done, who's the next guy that's supposed to get it done? Like 22 points, probably that's just not good enough for Nikola. But if it's not him, then who's going to step up? It's supposed to be, or excuse me, he didn't finish with 22. He finished with 22 in game one. What did he have in game two? What was it, 24 maybe?
24.
But so, like, it's supposed to be a guy like Michael Porter Jr. Michael Porter Jr. was painful to watch last night, and he looked like he was in pain, and watching him was putting me in pain. He looked stiff as a board. He's the definition of a one-dimensional player right now. If he's not catching, shooting it from three, he's an albatross for the team. It's just a total liability defensively. And then you're seeing guys that come back down to earth. You're seeing guys like off the street Rivers come back down to earth after being so great in the first round. For him to have 6 points, like your backcourt combined for 9 points. Like that's where we're at. Like Faku and Austin Rivers combined for 9 points, combined for 3 for 12 from the floor. And that was an improvement over game one. You're looking at Monty Morris play his worst stretch of basketball that I can remember. I've watched nearly every single game of his career. I haven't seen him play this bad. He is a combined 2 for 17 in games one and game two. He is a minus 47
brutal
in two games when he's been on the floor.
Brutal.
So not only are you not getting it from your starters, which three of the five starters finished with 6 points or less, you're not getting it from the bench. And that's why you're seeing him get, you know, seal clubbed.
All right. I mean, why would this change on tomorrow night? In the game three and four, I mean, I'm not giving up on the Nuggets. They've earned that, right? Yeah. They have the MVP. They made comebacks last year. I'm not going to give up on them. But give me some hope there, Zach. Give me some hope.
Well, the one thing that they need as a very baseline, like you think of like the old food pyramid, like the bottom of the pyramid on which everything else is predicated, has to be a sense of urgency. And when I sat there where Orlando's sitting yesterday and I said, these guys have to play with an incredible sense of urgency, you said, Zach, what does that look like? Like, how does that manifest itself in a basketball game, that sense of urgency? And I said, look back at game two when they lost game one against Portland and they could not go down 0-2 at home. And I said, in the first 4 minutes of the basketball game, three different Denver Nuggets were literally physically on the floor diving after loose balls. I didn't see that sense of urgency last night.
So you think they did quit like Michael Malone said?
I don't think it's as extreme as Mike Malone saying they quit, but it's somewhere in the middle. Did they quit? Were guys like not getting back on defense and just like, you know, tapping out? I didn't quite see that. But did they have the fire in their belly, that sense of urgency, that fervor that's required to beat a team that's right now better than you? No. So you have a team that's better than the Nuggets on paper, but also you're not playing, you're not ready for a fist fight, and that's what Phoenix is ready for.
Effort requires no talent. That's what it comes down to at the end of the day. You know, you could go out there and you got to be willing to give the effort. And I really think what the Nuggets need to do is pick and choose their points where they're going to try to get after and change the tempo of the game and get after the Suns, because you are playing at home. There is altitude. You saw Phoenix come out in game one and they picked up the tempo and they try to play at that speed. I truly believe that the reason why they're doing that is getting ready for altitude. Making sure that they do have their legs underneath them, making sure when the Nuggets do try to play with a fast pace, when they do play game three and game four, they can finish strong. But if you're the Nuggets, you got to say, we're going to kick these guys in the teeth and we're going to pick up the tempo and we're not going to allow that. But the surrounding cast has to be better, bottom line.
One last one there for you, Zach, and appreciate the overtime.
Of course, man.
Michael Malone said, if I can find five guys who can have that sort of effort.
What a shot that was.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. He said it'll be hard coming up with five guys.
I'm not even lying here. I mean, if we are at DEFCON, is it up or down DEFCON? Are we one is high or five?
I think one's
one?
The most serious. I think.
All right. For DEFCON one, the most serious, do we play JaVale McGee right from the get-go and just say, screw it? I mean, that's one guy that's going to run around and give you some effort. You got him.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to shake things up a little bit.
If anything, you just put JaVale McGee in there to go at Aiden.
Well, there
and
you go.
Try to get him into foul trouble.
I mean, it sounds
trouble.
Crazy. The guy's
different.
Guys barely played, but I can't even think of anything all that different to do. Help me out here.
So
aside from that, what else is there to do?
So here's my thing, and I said this on the Mile High Hoops podcast that I recorded before the show, available at denverfan.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Shameless plug. Is that schematics and adjustments are secondary right now. It doesn't matter what combination of guys you have out there. The Nuggets last night played, what did they play, eight, and this is non-garbage time minutes. I think they played like eight guys. Like, I'm not seeing it from any of the guys. Like, any of us. So, like, you can create these different combinations, but, like, that baseline of urgency and fire has to be there, and we're just not seeing it. I mean, for the rest of the Nuggets starters, four other guys collectively to combine for 26 total points, that's too shy of Jokic's total. You're seeing a Suns team that is, D-Mac, I'll say this. I'll take a big L on this. I said yesterday to you, I said, I look at the substance of game one. Outside that 15-minute stretch there, midway through the third and then, halfway through the fourth or whatever it was, it didn't feel like the Nuggets are punching outside their weight class. It feels like they're punching outside their weight class here.
All right. Yeah, because there is a difference between effort and they're just better than you.
Yeah,
I mean there is that.
And when it
you
looks like
try really hard against guys who are just better than you, and the guys who are better than you are going to win.
Better than them, you don't have a chance. But
if that's
right
the
now
case.
With this Nuggets team, what I'm seeing time and time again, it almost looks like the Suns have played together all year. They understand each other. There's chemistry there. And last night I looked at a basketball team that a lot of guys didn't really know how they fit into this roster or what their role is. And Michael Porter Jr., he's clearly
hurt.
It looks bad watching him play. You got to get him out of there. He needs the rest. That back
is
not going to get better.
I get it. The problem is it is kind of a now or never with Michael Porter Jr. And, like, there isn't an easy replacement for him, too. I mean, it was great to have Will Barton come back, but, he's on a minute limit restriction. He would keep playing. It's clear Will Barton would keep playing. But, they're trying to be smart, not ruin everything with him.
Yeah, I can't rip the hamstring right back off.
Dude, I don't know what else there is, really. I think personally, it's more of a case that they're just much better than the Nuggets, kind of, period. And that's what I was the most afraid of, Zach, after game one, when I saw how good Chris Paul was, because it's like, how are we going to account for this? Because you didn't have to there for a while because he wasn't 100%, but he's 100% obviously now and playing lights out. And by the way, I don't think the crowd, everybody with the crowd, these guys play in front of crowds and road games and all that. I mean, I think that is way overrated. I think a jump shot is a jump shot. I think they had plenty of open looks. I just think they didn't play strong. I don't think the crowd had much to do with it at all until it got to the degree where you're down 15 or something. I suppose the crowd could have an impact there in terms of just can we do this or not, but not until that point. Anyways, let's just say goodbye. Zach, thank you. I appreciate it. I know you got a big weekend. Can you give me a prediction for Friday night then?
I will say, I'm going to sound like a broken record. I think it's going to be much closer, but my gut tells me this is going to be a gentleman's sweep. This feels like the Nuggets could get one.
Hold on. Gentleman's means that they win one, right?
They win one.
Okay, so either Friday or Sunday.
But I just, I feel a little bit naive picking the Nuggets in this series. Part of my reasoning was, Dee,
it'd be silly now.
It'd be silly now. But part of my reasoning was that this group with Chris Paul has never really been through anything as a unit together. And how will they react in these moments of pressure? A 5-point game with 4 minutes left when they actually have never done it before. This is DeAndre Ayton's first playoff experience. Devin Booker's first playoff experience. Well, if they never have to feel that tension, then it probably won't be an issue.
Yeah, but right now, it's like the Jazz are going to figure that one out, not the Nuggets.
Right.
The Clippers,
right,
I guess.
Whoever.
We're not going to have to worry about that.
Yeah, it seems like the Nuggets are outclassed from a talent standpoint, and then when you mix in the lack of sense of urgency, that's why you've been blown out in consecutive games.
Thank you, Zach. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. Yeah, you too.
Do you like Michael Malone what? Let me play some Michael Malone, Orlando, get your reaction, okay? First, it was this.
I saw one team that wanted to be here and play with a purpose and urgency, and one team that did not want to be here and play with no urgency, and that's why we got our ass kicked.
And then there's this.
We had a lot of guys play really bad tonight, and then we allowed the impact of not making a shot to affect the other end. And it was really, I mean, playoff basketball. Can you sit down and guard one-on-one? It was this was just an embarrassing performance all the way around from top to bottom.
And the most damaging.
They've had their way with us on both ends of the court. I felt we quit tonight, which is something you never want to see. So I guess for game three, I'm just going to try to find guys that will at least go out there and leave it all on the line. I may have a hard time coming up with five guys that fill that, but these two games, these second halves, have really been disappointing, and that's an understatement.
Your reaction.
So, you know, the first audio that we played, I had no quarrel with that. You know, I think that it comes from a great place. It comes from he's saying what needs to be said. There's really not too much that I had that I argue with or any pushback, D-Mac. But as far as top to bottom, now you're saying your whole team. And I know that he goes back later on. He talks about, well, Will Barton was good. But then, you know, you talk about finding five guys and it's going to be tough. It's kind of like the poor me. My team is not doing well and I need, but I'm doing everything that I can as a coach. So I felt like he was trying to really single the team out in a situation where at this point he needs to be talking about the we and we need to be better. I need to be better as getting them prepared because that's something that I don't think we've been touching on enough. Mm. I don't think Michael Malone has done a great job of preparing this Nuggets team for what they're going to face against the Phoenix Suns. I really think that this team looks underprepared. But as the game goes on, I could see what Coach Malone is talking about as far as the want to, and guys are not giving it their all. And when you look up at the score, that tends to happen as an athlete where you look up at the score and guys are not passing the ball or the offense is not being as successful as you know it should be. And you're kind of maybe you're behind a step in situations like that, or maybe you're not trying to crash the boards. The biggest thing yesterday, D-Mac, that got me the most frustrated about the Denver Nuggets was watching the game. And there's about 2 minutes left in the first half. They're 19 for three at three-pointers. And guys are just traveling down court, and you're not even allowing your teammates an opportunity to get underneath or get themselves in position where they could possibly get a rebound, and you're just jacking up these threes, and they're not hitting. They're not going in.
Yeah, it's kind of sometimes the NBA. You either hit the threes or you don't. You kind of live by the three, you die by the three.
Yeah.
And as bad as they played, they were down by 10 points, but it was an ugly 10 points that they were down. At halftime, it was like, oh, my God. Like, if you don't straighten something out quickly, this could become a nightmare.
Yeah.
That's what I put out on Twitter.
Well, and the again, Suns had the momentum from the get-go.
I'm sorry to be right about that. And the Suns got, well, Crowder just came out and hit a couple threes right off the bat. And you're like, well, where is that coming from? And then you look at their scoring. Crowder 11, Bridges 16, 8-15, Paul 17, Booker 18. Broken record here, right?
Yeah.
It's balanced, as it was balanced in the first game.
Yeah, in the first game they had four guys that had 20-plus points in that game. And Chris Paul was the guy that wasn't scoring a lot, and people were wondering if he wasn't okay. And then he absolutely took over late in the third quarter in that first game. But you look at yesterday, and this team continues to just get everybody involved. You know, when you look at this box score and you just talked about Crowder and Aiden and you're saying that it looks balanced, then you go look at the Nuggets score box.
It's brutal.
You know, Nikola Jokic, 24.
24.
Then you go all the way down and there's two people with the next leaders or the second place is 11 points between Millsap and who was it?
Barton had 10. And
Michael Porter Jr. had
Michael,
11
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, Michael Porter
but it, Porter Jr. took a huge drop off.
He took 13 shots.
Yeah.
I had 11 points on 13 shots.
And another thing with Michael Porter Jr. as well, I get the sense of feeling when it's not going well. Obviously, that kid has a ton of confidence, and he's going to continue to shoot it.
Incredibly talented guy.
And he's very talented, as that high, you know, that high release in the shot. But when it's not going well, I'm looking at, you know, Will Barton comes on the court yesterday, given that energy, has that huge dunk, hits, knocks down, buries the three, chase down, has the pin off the backboard.
He was trying.
He's trying. He's giving that effort. Comes behind Chris Paul. Tries to knock the ball out, hits Michael Porter Jr. right in the hand. It's like he wasn't even ready for it. It's honestly like he had his back turned and you said, hey, turn around and try to catch the basketball. Like he did not see, he did not see his Will Barton running down the court and coming behind Chris Paul. And his reaction time just looks off with everything that he's doing.
And
then on top of that,
yeah, go ahead,
sorry. D-Mac.
No, go ahead.
I would just like
ahead.
To see him, for the love of God, get down in the post. Mm. You're 6'11". You're 6'11 right now. You're getting guarded by guys that are 6'6".
Yeah.
Let's see if you could go get some easy baskets in the post.
I think Malone's trying to get the guys going. I think you're just running into a brick wall here, because specifically in the backcourt, they're just so much better than the Nuggets.
And how do you get your guys going when you're up, every single time all you're doing is calling them out, telling them that you're sorry?
I don't know.
You've already played that card a couple times.
You tell me, does that work?
I'll tell you this, as much times as he already played it, if I'm a player in that locker room, I'm like, all right, coach, you know, it's going in one ear and out the other, to be honest with you, because I'm looking for the adjustments, and how can we get better, and how are we going to combat this thing, coach? And I'm going to try to give you as much effort as I possibly can, but you're saying a lot of the same things. You sound like a broken record every time we lose.
Hey, listen, let's keep it real. Campazzo, 1-for-7. Rivers, 2-for-5. 3-for-12. Morris, 1-for-7, 4-for-19 from your backcourt.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it's garbage.
You lose.
Yeah. You're not even going to have an opportunity to compete in the NBA.
MPJ, he's got to have 25, and Jokic has to have 35. And you got to get, I don't know, probably 25 combined from your backcourt, or you're going to lose and get killed, and they did. And I don't think that's I don't know, that's them being soft or quitting as much as you just weren't very good. I don't know, like, wow, so more effort would have made you make more jump shots? Well,
this team, it's the maturity. When you start that game yesterday, you see that, hey, we are 3 of 19 from the 3-point line. How about we stop doing that? Let's stop shooting threes. When are they going to realize that? Game one, when you see the Suns go on that huge run, there was a 12-minute span in game one from about halfway through the third period into the fourth period, about 11 minutes actually, where the Nuggets went like on a 42-14 run.
Yeah.
And what did the Nuggets continue to try to do? Even when the game wasn't out of hand, they're coming down there, let's jack up a three. Do they believe that there's a multiplier on the three ball? D-Mac, that if you score one in a situation like that, it's like you're in Vegas at the slot machine where you're hitting a multiplier and you get triple winnings.
It's like I'm in Topgolf, right? I can keep hitting that one. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Multipliers. All right, well, listen, speaking of Vegas, we've kvetched enough probably. You're probably sick of hearing it all day. The Nuggets are in big trouble, but maybe this is as far as they were ever going to get. You can make that argument, especially after losing Jamal Murray. This is not supposed to be happening to our Avalanche. So what are we doing here this week in Denver, Colorado with our sports teams? Last week, Orlando was so amazing.
High praise, Rockies 4-game win streak, only team
couldn't
in
lose
the MLB.
Last week. Right.
High praise. No, Avs just swept the St. Louis.
So, oh, right.
And then,
right.
You know, getting ready for Vegas. Nuggets finished off Portland early. You know, we were on that high horse last week, and now we're like, what the heck happened?
Well, we'll get to it. They're going to win tonight.
Yes.
They're going to win tonight. So let's get to that in the water cooler next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net. Call 303-388-8766 or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
It's time to take a trip to the water cooler.
Is this good for the company?
We need to talk about your TPS reports.
Did you see the memo about this?
We find it's always better to fire people on a Friday.
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Here's Tyler and D-Mac.
What would you say you do here?
All right, we're going to get into the ads here in just a second, but did you hear this at the water cooler? Novak Djokovic, the number one ranked player in the world, also from the same country, Serbia, as the Joker, our own Jokic. And, you know, we have...
Joker is on the scoring of Pegasus Nimbus, who Twitter will be trolling.
We love the Joker rap for sure. Well, here is the number one tennis player in the world. Wishing his countrymen good luck.
MVP. This is for my friend Nikola Jokic, the Joker. Congratulations for your MVP. Well deserved. Sending you big regards from Paris, Roland Garros. All right, I'm carrying you today with me on the practice and hopefully bringing you luck in the playoffs. All the best, my friend.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Anytime, you know, you could wish one of your fellow countrymen, you know, luck. That's awesome. For me, I would always try, you know, I'm close with the Miami guys from going to UM, but anything out of Toronto, Canada, always supported.
What about Jamaica
football? Always supported as well.
Okay.
If obviously there's not a lot of football players that end up being from Jamaica and playing football, you know,
you're pretty unique.
But just anytime you see any success from your country or from people that you may know, you're gonna be hyped up about it. Growing up, it's always hockey, right? I'm always excited about the hockey.
Now, let me go with the most, because we were having a debate: is Djokovic or Jokic the biggest athlete from their country?
I think it would be Djokovic.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because, you know, just hearing Nikola Jokic accept his MVP.
Yeah.
Right? Well, he talks about, you know, for him growing up, when he started playing basketball, he wanted to just play overseas. Like, that's what he thought. He never really looked at the NBA. Well, you're not going to look at the NBA because you don't have a big NBA presence from people out in your country.
You know what's funny is as big as basketball is, and it certainly is incredibly international. I'm getting the names mixed up. Novak has been number one for a long time all over the world, and tennis is kind of weird to say a tennis player is bigger than the MVP of the NBA. And maybe the Joker will get there at some point. We'll see where it goes. But right now,
I just think
Djokovic
tennis is bigger in Serbia than basketball is.
Right. That's a good point, too.
Yeah.
Most famous Jamaican athlete is got to be Usain Bolt, I would guess. Is there a number two?
Orlando Franklin.
There you go, my man.
If there a number
Wait,
two,
hold on. Are you the
Lennox
only,
Lewis?
Are you the only NFL, Jamaican NFL?
No, I'm sure there's been other people with similar backgrounds. Stephen Tulloch. Tully's has Jamaican roots.
Okay.
Wasn't born there like me, but parents were born there. So I'm sure there's people. Isn't N'Keal Harry doesn't he have
Caribbean
roots before being in Canada as well? I don't think it was Jamaica, but I know it's Caribbean right around in that. Maybe it might be Jamaica.
DeAndre Ayton's
but,
from
Jamaica.
But,
I mean, for
Jamaica.
Us, it's cricket, D-Mac. That's what, you know, I grew up watching cricket. And when I would go down to Jamaica and visit my family members, my aunts and uncles would take me to cricket games. And I'd sit there and I'd be like, this is utterly brutal. But cricket's a bigger sport. That's just like if you went to Jamaica and asked them, hey, is Orlando Franklin bigger than this cricket player, any cricket player down there? They're going to say the cricket player because they don't even understand. Half my cousins and aunts and uncles, when I first got to the NFL, that's when they really started watching football.
Right.
I'd be surprised if they understand the game now.
Well,
this is years ago.
We've had plenty of conversations about how unique your upbringing has been. It's tough to top. There's no doubt about it. But I know your passion for hockey is it runs incredibly deep. So I'm glad that we can spend some time here today to get see here it is with the Nuggets. Like, all right, they're getting beat. It's a better team. It's tough. It stinks. Do we really think the Golden Knights are a better team, Orlando, than the Avalanche? Do you really think the Knights are a better team than the Avs?
They're a better defensive team. They're a bit more physical team. And they trust their brand of hockey a lot more than the Avs trust their brand. So what I mean by that is when I look at the Las Vegas Knights, those guys are going to grind. You know, Stone and Marceau, those guys are going to instill stability, but also that bring your lunch pail to work every day. So you're going to play that 250-foot game of hockey with those guys. With the Avalanche, they've been able to rely on their explosiveness, their athletic ability way too much. What we saw from game one to game two, Vegas just flipped the switch and said, we're not going to allow them to dump pucks in. We're going to stick on them like glue. We're going to play these guys extremely close. But the big thing is we're going to lean on these guys. Because when you're leaning on the Nathan McKinnon, the Gabe Landeskog, the Mikko Rantanen, when you're leaning on them, now each and every time they're not allowing them to be explosive, because every step that a guy like Nathan McKinnon now has to take, it's a step away from the defender, and then it's a step to try to be explosive. Where before, teams wouldn't play these guys as close as Vegas is and as physical as Vegas is. So what you're seeing is now Nathan McKinnon, you're not seeing him be as explosive as you're used to, because you get guys that are grabbing his stick, grabbing his jersey, just playing him very tight, where now he's not allowed to show that athletic ability and that explosiveness.
You're very artfully dodging my question, though.
Was the question?
Who's the better team?
Who's the better team?
All right. Vegas is.
Vegas is. And the reason why I say that, because they're two top lines, D-Mac. Their two top lines are better than the Colorado Avalanche. And when you look at Kadri being suspended right now, he brings stability. He brings that grinder attitude to that second line. Right now, the Avs can't combat the two top lines for Vegas. So for me, it's Vegas all day just because of, one, you're missing Kadri. Calvert would have been huge in this series as well. Just another guy that is going to grind it out and just play greasy out there for you. Vegas just has two lines where, unfortunately, because they have two and the Avs only have one, and we didn't get any production out of that top line and you know, four shots on net between the top three players last game. Because of that, you're not going to be able to compete as well as Vegas has shown us that they can compete.
So you're expecting Vegas to win then tonight?
No, I expect the Avs to win tonight.
You just said Vegas is the better team. They're playing at home. They got
two things could be true, D-Mac. You could be the better team, and then you could still go win.
You're going to have to walk me through that one then. Okay. And a good thing happened for Nathan McKinnon today, but Heavy is the one that wears the crown, right? Yeah. And we'll explain details coming up next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
Orlando Franklin in for Tyler. Okay, buddy. Hockey. We're licking our wounds about the Nuggets. We'll get back to that. We'll even get to football at 4 about Deshaun Watson and Kareem Jackson. Those comments. Get your take on that. We'll go there. But congratulations are in order for Nathan McKinnon, as he has been nominated, as well as Connor McDavid and Austin Matthews, for the Hart Trophy, the MVP of the National Hockey League. Well, obviously, this sets up a crazy potential situation here in Colorado to have the MVP of your NBA team and also essentially the MVP of your NHL team in the same city in the same year. I mean, I really seriously doubt that's, you know what? Maybe it has happened. I don't know. the big country. There's, I don't know if it's ever happened in, say, like Philadelphia or perhaps in Boston or L.A. I mean, I guess it's possible, Orlando. Yep. But if it has happened, I'm going to guess it's pretty rare. So that being said, and, you know, Nathan is more or less regarded as the best player on the best team. So to me, that's kind of a no-brainer, right? It's Nathan MacKinnon.
Yep.
Agree, disagree?
I agree, but I truly... The heart trophy, first of all, is just looking at just the regular season. It has nothing to do with the postseason. If the postseason was factored into it, I think that, yeah, Nate runs away with it, even with, you know, the last couple games. I think Nate runs away with it. But since it's just looking at the regular season, D-Mac, I get a little worried. And that's because, you know, Connor McDavid is in that talk as well. You look at his 56 games to Nathan MacKinnon's 48 this past year. But just the points are overwhelming. You know, Nathan MacKinnon last year had 65 points. Connor McDavid had 105.
Mm.
You know, that's not a small margin. That's a huge margin when it comes to hockey.
You're starting a team. Would you take McDavid or Nathan MacKinnon?
Oh, I'm going to take Nathan MacKinnon.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, I'm going to take Nathan MacKinnon.
We'll see how it goes. What I wanted to get to, though, Orlando, is your take on we have whether he wins or McDavid wins, right?
Yeah.
We clearly, in Nathan MacKinnon, have one of the top players in the league,
yes,
if not the top player in the league. Isn't tonight what it's all about for that type of player?
Absolutely. It's instilling your dominance. Like, where have you been for the last couple of games? It's showing up. I know that he's tried to do things differently. I think that Nate has been playing physical hockey. We saw it a couple nights ago where, you know, the Avs are out of it. I think it was game 3 or 4, and yet he's still cross-checking. He's still playing hard. He's still playing tough. So I love that aspect, but you got to come up big. And the 4 shots on net a couple nights ago between Nate and Landy and Rantanen, it's not good enough. But they're giving Nate the opportunities, and I love what Bednar does when they dump the puck to Nate inside their own blue line and they let him get a full sprint. But you got to find ways also now to get your guys. What was different this past game, guys didn't work on their spacing well enough, where there was a little bit too much traffic once he would bring it across center ice. But Nathan MacKinnon has to show what he has been over the years, the last couple years, ever since he's been drafted. It has to come show up tonight.
So what does that look like in your mind?
I'd say a goal, 2 assists tonight,
mm-hmm,
but 7, 8, 9, maybe even into double digits shots on net,
yeah,
tonight.
Some element of dominance.
Yeah.
What do you think hasn't been clicking?
Well, what Vegas is doing is it's not that hard. You know, their defense is creating offense for them. They're playing these guys very close, and, you know, they're strong with the poke checks, but strong with the forechecks as well. So they're having their active body and active body parts and the active stick, and now they're being able to turn that into offense and create odd man rushes going the other way. With the Avalanche now, it's all about shots on net, dumping the puck in, avoiding a guy, you know, using that athletic ability, that speed, that quickness now to go chase the puck. I know that you don't want to see a guy like Nathan MacKinnon or Mikko Rantanen, these guys, you don't want to see them dump the puck in to go chase it because of how good they play with the puck in their hands. But when you have the puck on your stick, you're a big target. And Vegas has been great of just hitting you or moving you off your spot and now creating turnovers because of it.
When the Avs are up 2-0 and they're getting contribution from the fourth line, I was like, oh my gosh. Well, that is, well, great. You know, that is the cherry on top of the sundae. 2-0, we're getting this now. We're all set.
Yeah.
Because inevitably, MacKinnon, Rantanen, Landis got McCarr.
Right?
I don't know. I mean, you know, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, if we get Newhook in the mix, we're going to get these other guys. It's inevitable it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then it just didn't. And even a 2-1, I was like, well, you know, okay, all right. But well, I mean, something now. 2-2.
Yeah, whoa. Something has to happen. Something needs to change.
All right. 2-2. We're all right. I think we're all right. It's
yep.
A little scary here. We'll get it now. We'll get it somewhere in the last 5 minutes, right? Overtime. And you know what? NHL overtime is so quirky, isn't it? It does feel like, and I don't have the statistics, but it feels like it's over quick or it
or
takes
it's going long.
Right? Doesn't it?
It's either going to last a minute or it's going to last almost the whole extra period. Just looking at that, though, you look at the O'Connor shot in overtime. It's just like, what happened? How do you miss that? It's almost basically a wide open net. Mm. And you're like, for me, D-Mac, I'm sitting there, and now I believe the Avs have just got the momentum. And mm-hmm. I'm like, man, this is awesome. Okay, I get it. You missed a shot that should have went in. Right. But, you know, I appreciate O'Connor's play throughout the game because he took White Cloud and just absolutely dominated him early in that game and put him into the bench of the Vegas Knight. And mm-hmm. I thought that was a statement. I love stuff like that, seeing mm-hmm. guys just get after guys. And it gets a little chippy after, mm-hmm. but the heck with you guys. Couldn't care less.
Right.
So I thought he was having a great game. And then he misses the shot. He's not able to put it in the back of the net. But then you see how the momentum just switches so quick.
Right.
What was it? 40 seconds later, you know, Vegas scores and the overtime's over.
Yeah, too. And then the goal was quirky. That's the puck that bounced the right way. That is just blankety luck. And then a great goal. Not to take anything away. It was a great shot. But, you know, and you know what? Usually you sort of, you know, that moment you come up, all right, Stone hit a great shot. I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Nothing Grubauer could do about that. They make plays too. Yeah. And it can happen
and
just like that.
Ruby's been playing awesome.
Yeah. But you know, we did go back and look at it, Orlando, like in 2001, Avs, same situation, down 3-2 to the Devils. It was Wah that pitched a shutout, okay? I mean, somebody
you know,
has
Forsberg,
to be heroic.
Forsberg, Sackett, you know, Patty.
Right, correct.
You had some guys that wouldn't be denied, though.
Correct.
That's the difference, though, D-Mac. You know, Sackett, Forsberg, there was nobody getting those guys away from their game.
Right.
Right now, since game one, we've seen Vegas just dismantle the Avs. And it doesn't look like the same team. Heck, it doesn't look like the same team that we see in the St. Louis series.
So here we go. You grow up. You love a sport. You have a moment, a championship moment. Here it is. Who are you?
Yep.
This is like a legacy. I always blanch about how many, you know, Super Bowls a quarterback wins, like if he's a good draft pick. That's stupid. That's dumb. Only 4% of quarterbacks ever drafted have won a Super Bowl. That doesn't mean whether you should draft a guy or not. However, if you want to talk about legacy, if you want to talk about your meaning in history, you want to go in that conversation? Yeah, winning matters.
Yeah.
Big time.
Winning not only matters, but going out there to the barn, being down one.
Mm.
That's what matters, being able to extend the series, because anything could happen in Game 7. But just like hockey players talk all the time, and we saw Stone say it after the game in Game 5, he said the fourth one's always the hardest one.
Yep.
So we know the Avs are going to come out swinging, but they have to find a way to implement their own game plan.
And we know the Knights did struggle with that in their previous series. And lucky for them, they had Game 7 against the Wild at home. Well, they don't have that luxury. So you step on your toe a little bit. You stumble a little bit. The advantage goes to a 57%. It'll be sold out. Watch. They'll figure that out, by the way.
You're talking about here if it goes to Game 7?
They'll figure it. Watch. Wait till we hear that announcement.
I'm a little pissed off, though, when I saw Game 3, all of a sudden the Avs get out to Vegas and it's a packed house. I'm what the heck are we doing here? Let's go. We got to pack these crowds, man, and get it going.
Throw on another log to the embarrassment fire of other stuff that have nothing to do with the play on the ice. All right, Deshaun Watson to the Broncos? Are Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson, you know, are they passing each other with their desire to come here? And what do you think about Kareem Jackson advocating for somebody that's not even on the roster? Football at 4 is next.